The Cork Food Stories Podcast with Clara Cooney. A taste of Cork's food producers and suppliers, where every flavour tells a story.
Hello and welcome to the new series of Cork Food Stories with myself, Clara Cooney, founder of Clara Cooks and the gourmet grocer, artisan food store and deli based in Riverstick. Thank you to Red FM, the producers of this podcast, for enabling me to get the stories of some of the great food suppliers and producers of Cork. First up in this series is Jason Bryan of Valley View Farm, based in Riverstick in Cork, halfway between Cork City and Kinsale, a family-run business that has grown from strength to strength over the years. So let's get started. Hello, Jason. Welcome. Thank you very much for joining me.
Hi, Karen. Thanks for having me. I'm not sure do you know what you left yourself in for, but thanks anyway.
Well, you know, it was like when I started the store, the gourmet grocer in Riverstick, and I was like, okay, I need to find like local producers, and I went for a drive around the place, and sure, I came across yourselves, and sure, I had great of walking up to where all the hens were, getting a little tour of the place, seeing how you were producing, going in and just basically getting my dirty veg and coming down and washing it, and straight from the ground, I was like, this is it, this is exactly what I want, this is the type of food I want. Anyway, but it's brilliant to be able to find local farmers that can supply both businesses and also, of course, houses, households in the community around you. So we'll get into all of that where you're at now. But I'd love to go back to kind of looking at your childhood, because you did come from a farming background, a bit of a different farming background. But talk us through a little bit about that.
Yeah, so no, I grew up over in Fountainstown, not a million miles away, on a dairy farm. Basically, I suppose it was my father and two other brothers. Now, I have a sister as well, but it was the two other brothers who were involved on the farm. Big into cows, my family were. My father was big into cows as well, but, and I always worked with them. But just, I suppose, how do you say it? I never enjoyed working with cows. I suppose I like my Sunday evenings off and stuff like that. This idea of Sunday evening milking just didn't suit me, you know? That's what it didn't.
You deferred your freedom.
Exactly. You know, I suppose I often found there we were running to matches on a Saturday or a Sunday, and you know, we were always looking at your watch, kind of, you had to get back to milk the cows and stuff like that. But no, look, I loved farming, but just the cow side of things, I don't know what it was, just didn't enjoy it. It just wasn't for me. Now, my father might have said that I was more of a tractor man. I suppose as any young fellow, machinery, you know, that's what I loved, I suppose, you know. So, but yeah, I suppose, look, that's where I was brought up.
I'm sure it's a gorgeous spot over in Fountainstown.
It is. No, lovely. No, absolutely. Now, my father would, I suppose, my grandfather, I suppose, before me, did grow some potatoes. And I suppose maybe that's where I got into the vegetable growing side of things. So there was some little bit of history there. But I suppose my father packed up growing potatoes. I was only 3 or 4 years of age or something like that. So that's... It was in the blood, you could say, but
yeah,
not,
it was there. You
know, it was there. Exactly. Yeah,
sure. Your grandfather's probably looking down, going, "Thank God somebody started it up again for us."
Well, maybe, or maybe he'd say, "What the hell did you start that for?"
And know? Come here, so you've a couple of brothers that stayed on the dairy farm, do you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I two brothers that are still farming back in Fountainstown next door. Well, they're separate herds, but they're both milking. Cows back in Fountainstone. So I suppose even on that side of things, it's not too often. I suppose like growing up, you know, there was plenty of farming families around us as well, but you would have found maybe only one son or one daughter stayed farming and the rest went off doing other jobs. Whereas I suppose we were slightly different that way, that okay, there was three boys and a daughter, and the three boys did go farming, you know. So yeah. And look, to be fair to my father, he did set it up for us as well that we could do that, you know, because to try, you know, unless you're coming from a farming background, it's quite hard to get into it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, I suppose also understanding the land and stuff and the soil and what you needed, and you know, there's so much more to it, of course.
You can't learn all that from books.
No, exactly. It's all practical. So I suppose you left, did you leave the dairy farming before you actually met Helga, or
yes, it was happening that way. I suppose I started, potatoes was the first thing I started growing. As I said, I didn't like the cows. I think it was my leaving cert, my final year in school. I suppose, again, my father wasn't great at paying us, should I say? Do you know? So we had to earn our own money, if you know what I'm trying to say. So I started growing potatoes in my leaving cert year. I think I grew a half an acre of potatoes or something like this. And I'll never forget it, because I think potatoes made massive money that year. I keep saying that we've never seen that kind of money since. But I suppose when you were, what age was I, 16 or 17, getting these big bobs, I said, this
living
is
the
what
dream.
I'm at. This is it.
Living
Yeah.
The dream.
The bug, you know, I was bitten by the bug, you could say, you know.
Yeah.
So that's where that all kicked off. And I suppose it gradually grew. I met Helga a few years later, and eventually then we had Dylan, and Helga's actually from Wexford. So Helga moved down to Cork, and we then moved out to where we are now in Riverstick in 2008. We moved from Fountainstown out here. Like, I was growing the potatoes back in Fountainstown as well. I suppose working out of the yard at home, but I suppose then it kind of, you know, like everything, the way everything grows, we kind of, it was time to split everything up, you could say. So we moved out to the Riverstick then. Growing primarily just potatoes at the time. I suppose, to be fair to Helga, that's where Helga's vision kind of came in a bit. About the vegetables and different things like that, kind of, I suppose, look, we needed to take outside the box a bit, you know. We couldn't rely on solely potatoes the whole time, you know? So now, I suppose, the hens came along with my son Dylan. He was about, I think, you know, 6 or 7, maybe 8, and it was one of his uncles actually bought him a few hens for his birthday. I can't remember now, maybe 6 or 7 hens, and he was mad about them. They were all laid away lovely, and what we found then, that, you know, we had too many eggs for the house.
And the hens kept growing, yeah.
And the hens kept growing, there was too much baking going on, I was getting fatter and what have you, do you know what I mean? So then we started selling the eggs from the farm, from the Honesty Hut as well. And like that, then we found we didn't have enough eggs for the Honesty Hut. So, as you said, the eggs just, or the hens just kept on growing, the numbers kept growing. So in 2017, I think, 2016, 2017, we went away and got department approved. And went down with the whole, you could say, the regulations. Exactly. And when we went down that route, so we started supplying in local shops and people like yourself as well, and, you know, things like that, you know. All fairly local. I suppose
when was that? 2011, 2012, we started kind of expanding out to wholesale at that stage. Were you doing wholesale, the potatoes wholesale?
We were already wholesaling on the potato side of things. To be honest, yeah, the potato side of things, we were mainly wholesaling. The Honesty Hut, I should have mentioned that. The Honesty Hut started, again, I suppose, in 2008 or 2009 when we moved out to this farm in Riverstick. I suppose we had a number of neighbours used to come down to us and say, you know, you're never here. Is there any chance you leave out a bag of potatoes for us? That's how the whole Honesty Hut thing started. To be honest, how it started was just with a bit of a coal bunker. And we used to just throw a few bags of spuds into it, and a little post box next to it where people used to put the money into it. That's how it started. And it just gradually grew from that. I suppose it went from the coal bunker to from a small garden shed, a garden shed onto a bit more of an elaborate garden shed, and then to what we have now.
I know. To be honest, it's like a shock now. And I'll give you a story, because I went up there yesterday. I just needed to get some extra beetroot. And one of your guys was working there, and I said, "Do you have any bigger beetroot?" He goes, "One sec now, I'll go and pick them for you." So I was like, "Great." I'll sit in the car there, and he went off to pick the biggest beetroot that he could find for me. And we were skidding laughing, but there was a woman arrive, and she goes, "Sorry, is the shopkeeper coming back?" I said, "Oh no, it's an honesty shop. There's no shopkeeper here. You just drop your money in the little hole there in the counter." And she was just looking at me going, "What?"
Are you mad?
So she obviously never came across an honesty hawk before, but they were out for a spin and they'd come across. And she goes, "Oh God." And she goes, "But has he gone to get you stuff?" And I said, "Oh yeah, sure. He's gone to pick me some beetroot off the field." We couldn't stop laughing. And she just was totally amused with what was going on.
No, she's like, when we first done it, I remember fellas saying, when we first put up the first small garden shed, like one fella says to me, like, he says, "Geez," he said, they'll rob the shed and all, he said. Well, they couldn't get their head around this honesty thing. But to be honest, like, we can't, as another woman then said to me at the time, like, look, there's more honest people than dishonest, you know? So, and it is there so, is. You actually wouldn't believe how honest people are, you know. It's amazing, you know. Now, like, on that, I suppose, look, we only sell, you could say, like, the vegetables and stuff, we only sell what we produce on the farm. So, like, it is a bit from April, May, June, it's like any vegetable grower will know, you have a bit of a hungry gap. Yeah. You know, a hungry period. So
potatoes and eggs kind of thing. Like,
potatoes and eggs is basically it, you
know. Never short again.
Yeah. But we never go hungry anyway.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know? But no, it is something, you know, that maybe does let things down a bit on our side. But it's just something that we were kind of keen to keep, that we only sell what we produced. So we can stand over 100%. If there's something wrong, we know it's something we've done, where, you know what I'm saying. Now, we did start growing strawberries as well a couple of years ago to try to fill that bit of a hungry gap, just to have something else there, that we have strawberries kind of usually coming on the kind of start of June, maybe the end of May or something like that.
I've tasted them. They're divine.
Yeah, well, it's all, like, again, people always say the stuff that our produce, that it tastes so much better. I'll be perfectly honest, we don't do a whole pile different to what the supermarkets are doing. Like, we're growing the same varieties. We're doing, you know, more or less the same stuff. Okay, we're not pushing things as much to get, you know, as high crops, you know, as high yielding crops. We don't need to. But it's all down to freshness, I think. You know,
it is completely. And also, there's no doubt, Jason, that the sweetness, like, of your carrots and your parsley, the flavor is completely different. And I mean, even the suppliers that supply this in, that I could use if I wanted to, I still don't get them as good as what I get them directly from yourself. And I mean, I go up on a Monday morning and I see what's in there and I pull it. And if I need anything else, I'll just give you a call and you'll get it together for me anyway. But that's pretty much what I'm going, okay, these are the soups I'm going to make. This is kind of what I'm going to do on the sides. It's whatever is fresh, the freshest for me. And I know, like, during a couple of the months there now, you don't have a lot of the root veg and stuff like that. But then there's room then for the other suppliers, like there's kind of farms down the road that are doing the beautiful tomatoes and the beautiful lettuces and, you know, for the summer stuff. So I think there's a time for everybody. And, you know, while you're kind of slowing down a little bit, it's giving the others their chance to kind of, you know, build up a bit as well. So,
I suppose the vegetable industry is, at the moment, it's in a bit of turmoil. I suppose, look, you know yourself, in supermarkets, special offers and this and that. But again, we're quite lucky that way. I suppose selling stuff through the honesty shop, you know, we're getting a nice margin on it and stuff. And look, our specs aren't like, we don't mind having a wonky carrot or, you know, stuff. that. It doesn't matter to us. So the wastage is not the same wastage and stuff. But again, like most of our vegetables are sold through the Honestly Hut and a few others like yourself or a few local shops as well and stuff. But again, like yourself, you don't mind paying for that produce, yeah. You know what I mean? That quality or whatever. Whereas I suppose, yeah. You know, I don't know, just the way with the supermarkets, it's no, last time, don't get me wrong, supermarkets are good to us as well and stuff, but you know, it's just, it's another scale, I suppose, you know?
It is another scale, but to be honest, if I look at it, there's not that much difference in the price for me anyway, purchasing for what I need for the shop, but the difference in the flavor and what comes out when you're producing the goods, it's huge. So, you know, if you weigh it all up, people are going to come back. Well, they come back to me because the taste of the food, you know. So if you're producing good food for people, they're, you know, they're going to come back to you. So for me, it's so important that I get good produce from as local as possible. And you've got like Owen around the corner from you down the road. He does the beautiful lettuces and the spinaches and the tomatoes and all that as well. And they have the greenhouses there, and it's the same with them as well. I'd be ringing them and I'd go, I'll be in your driveway at 7:30 in the morning, you know, he'd go, I'll be ready for you. So, you know, and he'd come up with the crate and put it into the boot of the car. But I love that. And I think that's great. But also I think, you know, your business has just grown from strength to strength. I know you were just doing kind of few locals, but you're gone much bigger now with your eggs and potatoes as well, aren't you?
Yeah, well, look, the potatoes were always kind of, you could say, the big part of the business, I suppose. Look, we do supply the multiples through a middleman or whatever, but I suppose I would always say
the middleman.
Yeah, the potatoes. Potatoes are the ones that kind of pay, you can say, the big bills, if you know what I'm saying. And the vegetables and the eggs then are my, you know, they're the growing part of the business, you know what I mean? And like the eggs, especially the eggs have really worked out well for us. Now again, it's growing, but it's growing organically. It's not that we're pushing it, you know, it's just they're growing the whole time because what we're finding is our sales, you know, as in we can't produce. No, obviously at certain times of the year, we might have too many eggs, but you know, in general, we year on year, the egg sales are growing. And that's again, I've been down to, we're trying to keep things as fresh as possible. It's all word of mouth. It's like, we do very little advertising. And it seems to be word of mouth which is, I would say, is probably the best form of advertisement.
100%. You know? I think, anyway, when it comes to food and quality, and when you're quite niche and you're doing things a bit differently, it is about word of mouth, you know. You know, you can have the big suppliers out there, whatever, but as I said, they're not going to get, you know, the same as what we're getting direct from yourself.
Yeah, I know. Like on the hens there, like this, like we have 1,500 hens, which to some people that seems like an awful amount.
I've seen them. If you've a huge bit of land up there, they're running around having a ball.
Like we have three ranges, three flocks of 500 birds in each flock, three identical size flocks. But like I go to some fellas there, you know, where you're going to try to learn a few things from them. And like we're going to fellas with 20,000 birds and, you know, 10, 20, 30,000 birds, you know. And it's just, like, as I said, 1,500 sounds like a lot, but in the scheme of things, it's very, very small. But I think that's where we can make sure that we do have the quality all the time, you know. So,
And they're happy hens. And I mean,
they are.
I mean, I loved going up there now, and you were just like, just press the button there and out your eggs will come, you know. And I was like, oh, this is great. They're still warm. I was like,
you were there on a sunny
really
day.
Really fresh.
Yeah, but you were there on a sunny day, which is always nicer. You know, that's what it is.
Exactly. It was a nice sunny day, exactly, when we were up there. But also, I suppose, on top of that as well, I know yourself and Helga, you're very much about the environment, looking at sustainability and how you can do things a bit differently. And also, I suppose all of us now are, especially in the last few years, we're looking at our own carbon footprint and what we're doing differently. So talk us through a little bit of that side of things and, you know, the things people don't see what you're doing on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, well, look, sustainability is the buzzword at the moment, I suppose. Like, sustainability can be so many things. Even just make you, like, again, I go back to we're a small family farm. Like, for me, sustainability is being able to pass this farm on to my kids or something, you know, just be able to survive at it. But yeah, look, on the vegetable side of things, we're reducing pesticides and stuff like that. We're using minimal amounts. Like, we use nets for insects, you know, to keep certain insects off the cabbages and carrots and stuff like that. And on the carbon footprint, now we're looking into it at the moment, but we're not there yet. We're hoping in the next 12 months we will be solar panels now for our own electricity use. You know, like, electricity for us is a massive thing. Yeah. With refrigeration and stuff like that, you know. So
yeah,
but look, I suppose one thing I always say as well, like, the other thing is food waste.
Yeah.
You know, off Huge. Potatoes now, yeah, like off the potatoes that we're selling to the supermarkets and stuff like that, there's a lot, you could say, a waste that doesn't meet the spec, you know. Where I was talking about the wonky carrot earlier on, doesn't matter to us where we're selling the carrots, but the potatoes it does. But we also have cattle, so we're actually feeding the waste potatoes or vegetables to the cattle as well. So, okay, it's a waste vegetable, but it's not getting
amazing.
Dumped, you know what I mean? It's all getting recycled. You know, that's what it is. Look, to give you, like, we're rain harvesting for any washing of vegetables and stuff like that, or washing of potatoes. Again, mentioned the hen manure.
Yeah.
Best manure you
best
can
manure
have.
Ever.
It's like rocket fuel, is the way I'm saying. And, you know, it is. I didn't realize it until, you know, hey guys, okay, from 1,500 hens now, I'm starting to realize we do have a nice bit of hen manure, and you do notice it, you know. And it's, look, cover crops again is another one. After, like, we grow a bit of tillage, barley and wheat, We try to set cover crops again to improve the soil structure.
Yeah.
After that, and we are starting to see the benefits. Like, this is all a long term thing; it's not a short term thing. And we're starting to see the benefits of all this.
And I suppose, Jason, really, like, I mean, yes, you've grown a lot, but really, 2008 to now, it's not a very long time for, you know, your farm. You know, so there, you're such a young business, with so much more ahead of you. And I suppose, really, even the things, like, I know that you were growing some, I think Helga was looking at some wildflowers and some areas for the bees, and just biodiversity and making sure, like, that, you know, you have spots of land.
Yeah, I know, like, you know, we often like a corner now, to be honest, like, the first time we done the wildflowers, you could say it was a waste area, you know, there was nothing going on there. And we just, as you say, we threw in the wildflowers, and God, it's amazing to see. Okay, outside of the aesthetics of it, it looks beautiful, but even to see the bees and stuff inside there,
amazing,
you know,
I know.
And look, I suppose even around the farm again itself, like, we're all the time planting a couple of trees and hedging. Again, a lot of it's probably just to even make it look better, you know, the aesthetics of it. But that all has a knock-on effect as well, you know.
Yeah.
And you do, like, even Helga would make the comment there during the summer, I think we might have been having a lazy Sunday morning, getting a bit slow out of bed or something, you know, the window was open, and you could hear all the birds singing, you know. And
yeah, gorgeous.
Just like when we first came out here, when we first built our house in 2008, that wasn't there.
Yeah.
You know, but I suppose, as I said, the trees and the hedges and all that have been planted, and all that is coming in. And now, and I would say, look, again, farming in general has a bit of bad rep, you know, over the last couple of years. But to be fair, okay, look, to be fair, most farmers, they want to look after what they have, you know, and they are good custodians of the land. Look, everyone can make mistakes. It happens everywhere. But in general, you know, people do their best, you know, that's what they do.
I think so. And I think, you know, you know, I suppose even old school agriculture Ireland, the way, you know, who was back in the day. Even there's an awful lot of people kind of turning their heads a little bit, learning a little bit more, or like yourselves, kind of looking at different ways to do farming, loving farming, but how can we do it differently? And that's what this generation is all about. And the next generation, your kids, I mean, you know, what is it going to be like for them? You know, I mean, for us now, we're very focused on climate and the, you know, sustainability and the carbon footprint and the environment and so on. And we're only here to start that. It's the children, it's the next generation who are really going to be deep diving into it.
And that's where I go back. Like, this is, for me, sustainability is being able for me to pass my farm on to my kids, and for them to be able to make a living from it, and hopefully a bit more. But definitely, like, you know, I do see a trend, and obviously the last few years as well, but there's, and if we get people to search out, you know, the local producers, you know, and there's plenty of them there. It's amazing. Like, you found them when you opened up your store, like, you didn't have to travel too far to find them. Like, you know?
No. You can find them all right. But even, like, I remember when I came home from Australia, I planned on only coming home for a year, actually, and I was renting a house down in Merthyrville. And I went, right, where am I going to get my fresh eggs from? And I just went spinning around in the car up the back roads. There's so many farms up there. And eventually I came to this corner, and in the corner there was a load of hens running around the road. And I went, they definitely sell eggs in there. Sure, in I went, and there was a couple inside. They also have cows as well. And sure, they do the whole lot. They do the turkeys and all, and the at Christmas. And sure, I've been getting my turkeys from them. I used to go up and get my eggs from them and all that. It's gas, like, you know. But you do have, you, if you go out and look for them, you find them. They're here. We're in Ireland after all. And again, it's like these honesty boxes. I started coming across loads of them in Ireland. I love them. And even your next door neighbor had the turf honesty shed. I used to get I used to go get my vegetables from you and then grab the turf next door for the fire.
Yes, No, and as I said, look, it is fantastic, you know, because, like, it's great for us, you know, it gives us that bit of extra cash flow or whatever, you know what I mean? And to be honest, it's brilliant. The most enjoyable part about all of it, even on a rainy day when you're out there picking carrots or parsnips and the rain is belting down on top of you, but when you go back and stop up the shop, and someone, you know, just says to you, oh, we can't get carrots anywhere else as good as these or whatever it is. Do you know, that is what makes it worthwhile, you know? That's what it is, you know?
It is, absolutely. And, you know, I suppose really kind of looking at their, you know, looking at Irish agriculture, for me, I think it is one of the most sustainable in the world, you know, compared to other countries, and definitely what we're doing. Producing kind of high quality food with a low environmental footprint on it as well. And I was looking also at this, you know, a lot of people are working on different types of fertilizers now and stuff like that, that are reducing carbon footprint. And, you know, I suppose, you know way more about that than I do, you know, but it seems to be a never ending learning journey for you.
Absolutely, yeah. And like, and look, we go down to technology route then again. Like, we've gone using GPS now on tractors and stuff like that, you know, so we're not overlapping fertilizers or passes in a field and stuff. The technology that is there and the way it's moving so fast as well, it's fantastic. But again, just with the costs of, you mentioned fertilizers, so we have to be looking at all these different options. Just because the costs of them are gone so substantial, you know, like, we're looking at all these things, and also again because of environmental systems as well, you know, we're gone with GPS on the tractors, on the machinery. Again, that's to cut down on, you know, there's no overlapping, that we're making best use of everything, you know. And now again on the vegetable side of things, to be honest, so much of that is done by hand, again because the scale we're at, you know, we're not a large scale, you know, for investing machinery and stuff like that. So
what's like GPS? So is that like a kind of a technology that's come out so that it just basically tracks what you do every day kind of thing, is it?
And basically, then, yeah, basically. We drive up and down, I suppose, the layman terms, we drive up and down the field. It will steer the tractor, like we press a button in the tractor and it will steer the tractor. So if we are doing something, say, a 24-meter width, it will be bang on 24 meters every time. So there's, like, if we're spreading fertilizer, there's no overlapping of it. Whereas you could say before we went down that route, you might think you're traveling at 24 meters, but you might actually be traveling at, say, 23 meters. So you're overlapping a meter, which is a wastage and there's no need for it. You know what I mean?
Well,
basically, now I look at it, goes into, yeah, it's that precise. It will turn on as in open and close shutters when you get out to the end. It's unbelievable how precise things are, you know. But again, that's the way everything is moving, you know. And it's all this stuff is expensive. But when you consider the cost of fertilizer and different things, it's, you know, it doesn't belong covering the cost, you know. When you, as I said, eliminates that waste, you know. That's what it does. Yeah. You know?
But I think you're doing a lot yourselves anyway, you know. So,
Yeah, and again, as I said, like the vegetable side of things, unfortunately, it's all by hand anyway. So there's no GPS going up the top of here. Not yet anyway, you know. So, but no,
You know, you have, I know before Christmas, oh my God, you had a fire.
Yeah, the fire. So basically we had a fire in one of our refrigeration stores for the potatoes. Look, which is just one of these things, I suppose, you know.
It was mad because, you see, the following morning I came up to get some stuff and I was like, Jesus, the place is never in darkness. And
yes,
even going into the shed, the lights didn't come on. And I was there it was pitch dark. So you know me, I'm gone in, you know, 7 a.m. and looking around. And then I saw your Instagram post about what happened. And I was like, oh my God. So it's like 2 days before Christmas?
Yeah, the 19th, Monday evening it happened. So yeah, there's never a good time for that to happen, but Christmas week certainly wasn't a good one. You
was
know?
There much damage done, Jason?
Look, we're still assessing it, you could say. But yeah, stock was the big one. Look, straight out, we had about 300 boxes of potatoes, about 350 ton of potatoes inside there, which would have been destined again for the Cork and Kerry kind of markets. Like again, outside of everything, you could say financially and different things. The worst bit of it, I found, I was ringing customers Monday night and Tuesday morning, kind of telling them, look, like, I won't have enough Pinks or Golden Wonders and stuff like that to supply. You know, I was saying, oh, look, everyone understood, and you know what I mean? It was a genuine excuse. But that was the worst part of it. You know, that's
of
what
course,
it was.
Of course, because you just don't want to let people down. And
that's right.
And that's the hard thing. Of course, people are, you know, empathizing towards you for something like that to happen on.
Yeah, because in the shop now, we only said, and you buy a few of them from time to time as well, is we tried the last couple of years these purple potatoes.
Oh, I adore them, yeah.
Yeah, but again, unfortunately, our stock of purple potatoes were inside that refrigeration store. You
know, I was wondering, actually, the last few weeks, I was like, there's no purple potatoes out. And of course, I suppose this is the time you have a good bit of the purple potatoes going around. That's a shame.
Yeah. Anyway, look, it's a short-term thing. It'll be up and running again before we know it. But it is just a bit of a part, you know, kick in the ass, you could say.
It was. Neighbours obviously helping out. Fire Brigade were brilliant. Was the Carrigline Fire Service that came out to you?
I can't thank them enough, to be honest with you. When we rang them, I don't know all times, but I'd say they were out within 15 or 20 minutes to us, you know. There was two from Carrigline and one came from Kinsale, and a guard as well from Kinsale came out to us as well, and neighbours as well. No, I have to say, look, you really do, when something like this happens, you do find out your friends and stuff, you know, that's what you
100%.
Do, you know.
And
absolutely. No, I have to say, brilliant, you know. And even, and as again, customers of ours, customers have been excellent to us as well. You know, look, again, on the potato side of things, you know, some of our bigger customers, you know, they've helped us out fantastically as well. And you know, again, as I say, anyone really, you know, everyone said we're just at the end of the phone if we needed anything, or you know what I mean? So,
yeah,
in fairness, it's been fantastic. It's been fantastic, you know.
Look, onwards and upwards anyway for 2023. How many children?
I mentioned Dylan. I suppose I should mention the rest of them. There's myself and Helga, and we have 5 kids. I have Dylan is 17. I have, I forget, well, no, it'll be shot. I have Harry, who is 13, Holly is 12, and the youngest two you just saw there over my shoulder earlier on is Lottie and Rosie. So,
so is that it now? Yeah. Are you stopping, or are you going to keep going?
I've been told with fairly forceful words that is it, you know. So, but no, I was going to say they keep me busy, but to be fair, I think they keep Helga busy, and maybe that's why we keep the farm growing or something like that, to keep me busy. You know,
I know exactly. And tell me, with Dylan anyway, because he's 17, is he showing interest?
Absolutely, yeah. No, Dylan, as I said, look, he was the one that kind of started with the hens. Obviously, it grew on, but he's the one who started going with the hens, and he does. In fairness, every weekend, every Saturday, Sunday, if there's anything to be done, he's down in the ticker bed as well. And like any young fella now as well, he's got his tractor license. So, you know, he's fairest. Look, there could be a worse things, I suppose, when he goes off in the tractor. I know he's not up to, you know, he could be up to worse things, I suppose.
Exactly. But that's great to see that he's got the interest. And I suppose it's so different to how you were brought up, because dairy farming is such a different type of farming compared to what you're doing. I know there's a lot of hard work in
it is. Ours is very seasonal. Like, we, you know, obviously autumn time and springtime especially, you know, it's really full on. Autumn again, when the main potato harvest is on, like, the vegetables is more carried out, you know, there's a few hours every day, you know. And the eggs, okay, the hens are a bit like the cows. Like, someone asked me that, how come I didn't stick at the cows and yet I got at the hens? Because the eggs have to be collected every day too. But I just said, like, the cows have to be milked at 5 o'clock, whereas you can collect the eggs at 12 or 3. It doesn't But quite similar to cows at the same time. You know, you have to be there every day as well to check them and let them out and lock them up and things like that, you know. But no, like, look, as I said, the lads have a fair interest in farming. Holly, my eldest girl, she has a couple of ponies there as well and mad keen into it. And when the pressure is on, she has no problem in helping out either, you know. Yeah. And Helga as well, look, I suppose, as I said, the honesty shop and stuff was Helga's brainchild, and she keeps me busy anyway, because no doubt she'll come up with another plan that we should be growing something else or something. And, you know, but that's how it all, look, to be honest, that's how all our plans started, usually over the dinner table or something like that. We're kind of be discussing and someone says, oh, you know, we see this in the supermarket, and can that be grown here? And, you know, and that's like, we've tried, like, I think our range at the moment, you could say this year we had leeks, parsnips, carrots, beetroot, a range of cabbages, Brussels sprouts, pumpkins,
Romanesco,
yes, cauliflower, the other ones. Broccoli was another one that we had kind of during the summer months, late summer.
Would you ever do the greens, get the greenhouses going for the lettuces and the spinaches and the kales and all that?
You're starting to sound like Helga now.
It's kind of like it's a different season again. You know, it's like when you're when
it is.
when the root veg kind of season stops, you go into the new season of the new produce.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Like we do, like, look, as I said, we put up the tunnel and put strawberries into it. I just felt that's the way we, again, Helgi comes from Wexford, so maybe that's where the strawberries came from. But
yeah.
It is being suggested a number of times by Helgi again that we should be doing, you know, salads and leaves and stuff. I do like a couple of months just where we're quiet.
You're trying to push that out a little bit.
Yeah. But no, look, I won't rule it out, but it'll probably happen yet, but just not today or tomorrow is the
way,
you know.
And you know,
yeah. Now look, again, it is something that I am the whole time toying back with the honesty shop part. It is something I'm all the time toying with. We did start stocking, right, some raw milk from a local producer down in Nova.
Ashling, yeah.
And Ashling Murphy, that's right, yeah. In Newfoundland Farm. And that was the first stuff we ever stocked that wasn't ours. So I am trying, look, maybe we should go looking for local, like yourself, you know, looking for local producers, you know, the people who are growing tomatoes. Like, I suppose there comes to a stage we can't do everything ourselves, you know? So it is something certainly that we probably know. I don't have any interest in going, buying, I don't know, French or Spanish tomato.
Do you think, like things like that, looking at other producers would be definitely a positive, you know? And would make life easier for me that I could just go up to you guys then and get it all.
Stop
me traveling the road.
It would be a great, like, I suppose people, like markets, the farmers markets are fantastic, you know, and that is where you do see, you know, all local producers, you know, a number of them. But like, we did try markets before, but for us, and I'm not knocking them, it just didn't work for us personally, because we just found we were tied, that day we were tied to that. And I suppose a lot of our work is so weather dependent. Generally, the one dry day of the week, it was market day or something like that, you know. And that's, I suppose, that's then where we found that the honesty shed seemed to work for us, because, look, it was on our doorstep. You know, we spent an hour or half an hour, whatever it was, stocking up in the morning, maybe, you know, a couple of hours, okay, harvesting the stuff and then then stocking it. And then we could walk away from it for the day. You know what I mean? So
no, it's great. You don't have to have it manned. Like, I mean, you know, having people come in and just getting their stuff. And there's always, every time I'm there, that even if it's early morning or going in after a day's work, there's always people in there. You're always meeting people. And
I think people, it's like, lovely. Do you know, look, dare I say, am I being a bit antisocial by saying this? But, you know, I think some people like it. You can walk in there. You don't need to be smiling at anybody. You know what I mean? That, you know, some days it's nice to just be able to go in and get something and you don't have to say hello or smile at anyone. You just get what you want and walk
grab
back.
Grab what you want.
You know?
Throw the money in the little, in the countertop and out the door. Sure. I mean, that's great for people, though, isn't it? It is, yeah. But look, that's great. You know, there's you've grown so much in such a short period of time. Fantastic to see. It's great having it. I'm so happy that I found you, and now all my own family, they only go to you to get their vegetables. Took them a while to find you, but once they did, that was it. Then, you know. So, well, I think that's everyone. Yeah,
and Clara, I would say, like, it's people like yourself. And just the general public to come to us, you know, as I said earlier, it is what makes it worthwhile. And you know, without the customers coming to us, it wouldn't be happening. You know, that's what it wouldn't, you know. So it is great, you know, that's what it is.
It is great. Well, look, Jason, thanks a million for coming on. Keep doing what you're doing. And I'm looking forward to seeing those lettuces you're going to grow next year now. Tell Helga I said so. I'll be seeing you guys very soon, but thanks a million. But just so everybody knows exactly where you are, yes, you're River Stick, but you're, you know, you're up the back of River Stick. You're not really. What's the actual official address?
Yeah, the official address is Rivers. It's Sleeve Row, River Stick. But what I said, we're actually about halfway between Carrigaline and River Stick. Near Hepburn Hall would be kind of a good location. Yeah. People know Hepburn Hall, and we're just around that area. Look, we have a Facebook page there, Valley View Farm.
Yeah, and you're on Google. You can Google map you.
Great. Just remember to bring plenty of change with you, because
plenty of change.
As I said, it's an honesty hunt.
there's no change from the €50, lad. So, you know, bring the coins. The coins are important.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. Absolutely.
So listen, Jason, thanks a million, and all the best to yourself and Helga. I'm sure I'll catch up with you very soon. And thanks for taking some time out this evening. And we'll chat to you again very soon.